Following are some comments on William Shakespeare's The Tempest, Act 5. The rarer action is in virtue than in vengeance. Prospero completes his revenge, renounces his magic books and staff, and prepares for his voyage home to rule Milan in the time that remains to him. In Act 5, Scene 1, it doesn't take long for us to realize that Prospero will make the right and merciful call in dealing with his enemies. Even Ariel is moved at the plight of Alonso, Antonio, and Sebastian, who, sitting in a garden near Prospero's cell, quote-unquote, abide all three distracted and the remainder mourning over them. Act 5, Scene 1, Lines 12 through 13. Upon hearing this, Prospero sums up his reaction as follows, quote-unquote, though with their high wrongs I am struck to the quick, yet with my nobler reason gainst my fury do I take part. The rarer action is in virtue than in vengeance. Act 5, Scene 1, Lines 25 through 28. Virtue, as the Renaissance humanist commonplace goes, will always prove productive of still greater good, while vengeance is destructive and decreative, tending to chaos instead of order. Prospero will unsay the spells he has laid upon the three sinful men, and, quote-unquote, they shall be themselves, so that they may receive their just reckoning. Act 5, Scene 1, Line 32. Immediately after letting us in on his decision to exercise genuine authority rather than play the tyrant with his now hapless enemies, Prospero details the stunning reach of the powers he has long exercised and now proposes to let go once and for all. As the Norton editors point out, the description he gives us is adapted from Arthur Golding's 1567 translation of Ovid's Metamorphoses, Book 7, lines 265 through 277. Aside from consorting with fairies and elves, controlling nature in truly impressive ways, and the like, the most startling claim Prospero advances is that by his, quote-unquote, so potent art, graves have, quote-unquote, waked their sleepers, oped, and led them forth. Act 5, Scene 1, Lines 48 through 50. Most readers and audience members probably won't have seen this claim coming. Raising the dead is a frightening power steeped in divinity. It does not sound like something we would consider white magic, as opposed to darker occult practices. All the same, as Sean Benson points out in an article titled, quote-unquote, The Resurrection of the Dead in The Winter's Tale and The Tempest, references to similar activity are not lacking in Shakespeare's later plays. Pericles, Prince of Tyre, The Winter's Tale, and Cymbeline also gesture towards the resurrection of the dead, whether real or apparent. Benson's article may be found in Renaissance, Essays on Values in Literature, Volume 61, Issue 1, Marquette University Press, Fall 2008. Whatever the case about this startling claim to have wielded the power of resurrection, Prospero makes a tough decision. He will forswear any such rough magic and return to his old life as a mere mortal, even though a rather important one as Duke of Milan. Act 5, Scene 1, Line 50. He pledges, quote-unquote, I'll break my staff, bury it certain fathoms in the earth, and deeper than did ever plummet sound, I'll drown my book. Act 5, Scene 1, Lines 54 through 57. Upon the entrance of Alonso, Antonio, and Sebastian into the magic circle that Prospero has drawn, he waits for the spell he had cast on them earlier to wear off. To himself, since they cannot hear or see him yet, he proceeds to sketch the fault of each man. Quote unquote, most cruelly didst thou, Alonso, use me and my daughter. Thy brother was a furtherer in the act. Act 5, Scene 1, Lines 71 through 73. As for Antonio, he stands accused most recently of egging Sebastian on to murder Alonso, and thereby repeating by Neapolitan proxy his initial usurpation of Milan. Act 5, Scene 1, lines 74 through 79. But even Antonio is forgiven, though neither he nor Sebastian bothers to apologize. Prospero realizes that he should dress himself so as to be recognizable to his one-time abusers. Ariel, sensing freedom to be near, can hardly contain his glee as he helps dress Prospero in his proper attire as Duke of Milan. Quote unquote, "Merrily, merrily shall I live now under the blossom that hangs on the bough," sings this innocent, natural creature, even as he invests a mortal man in robes of state. Act 5, Scene 1, lines 93 through 94. To move things along, Prospero tells Ariel to summon the bosun and the ship's master to the scene. When Prospero finally addresses King Alonso audibly and allows himself to appear to him, Alonso promptly agrees to forget his insistence on Milanese tribute for Naples and asks forgiveness for his complicity in the exiling of Prospero, saying, quote unquote, "Thy dukedom I resign, and do entreat thou pardon me my wrongs." Act 5, Scene 1, lines 118 through 119. Next, the magician embraces his loyal friend, Gonzalo, and in an aside to Sebastian and Antonio, promises not to reveal to Alonso their conspiracy against him, at least for the time being. He then demands his state back from his brother Antonio, saying, quote unquote, "I do forgive thy rankest fault, all of them, and require my dukedom of thee." Act 5, Scene 1, lines 131 through 133. King Alonso is amazed to see Prospero still alive, but his chief care remains his lost son. Quote unquote, "I wish myself were mudded in that oozy bed where my son lies." Act 5, Scene 1, lines 150 through 152. To this despairing monarch, Prospero at first commiserates as one who has, in a sense, also lost his child. He has had to give Miranda to Ferdinand, but it would be wrong to toy with a grief-stricken father, so Prospero has one last wonder to reveal to Alonso and the whole party. He shows them Ferdinand and Miranda playing that ancient game of royal strategy, chess. Act 5, Scene 1, line 171 and following. Even Sebastian must admit that this is, quote-unquote, "a most high miracle." Act 5, Scene 1, line 177. The game itself seems to entail some contention between the couple, with Miranda accusing Ferdinand of making tricky moves on the chessboard. Quote unquote, "Sweet Lord, you play me false." Act 5, Scene 1, line 172. This possible act of cheating would seem to transition Ferdinand out of the play's dream world, in which he has played the romance quester in a short space, and initiate him into the guileful realm of politics and statecraft. Even so, Ferdinand's reaction to the sight of King Alonso suggests he has lost none of his innocence or loyalty. He is wonderstruck, exclaiming, quote unquote, "Though the seas threaten, they are merciful." Act 5, Scene 1, line 178. He knows that he is not yet the King of Naples, but he is overjoyed to see his father still living. So Ferdinand and Alonso are reunited, and Miranda's turn comes to marvel at the sight before her. Quote unquote, "O brave new world that has such people in it." Act 5, Scene 1, lines 183 through 184. Alonso is very pleased with the match, and by way of a question, Gonzalo pronounces Prospero's long-ago exile from Milan a dynastic fortunate fall. Quote unquote, "Was Milan thrust from Milan that his issue should become kings of Naples?" Act 5, Scene 1, lines 205 through 206. Ariel has brought the bosun and ship's master into Prospero's presence, and they relate how they beheld with wonder the vessel they thought they had lost forever. Quote unquote, "Our royal, good, and gallant ship now stands ready for service as before." Act 5, Scene 1, Line 240. King Alonso's desire for the particulars of this miraculous affair is brushed aside for the moment by Prospero, for there's still the matter of Caliban and his wicked overlords to settle. Ariel has set them at liberty to face judgment, and the first result is general merriment. All three look like perfect fools in the gaudy apparel that Ariel had earlier laid out to distract them from their intent to murder Prospero in his cell. Prospero's inclination is to admit responsibility for Caliban. Quote unquote, "This thing of darkness I acknowledge mine." Act 5, Scene 1, Lines 278 through 279. What exactly is Prospero implying by, quote unquote, "acknowledge"? Does he mean that he will take Caliban with him to Milan and there help him complete his education? That seems unlikely, but one can only conjecture about such post-textual matters. In any case, Caliban, afraid almost for his life, admits his error and promises to mend his ways. Quote unquote, "I'll be wise hereafter and seek for grace." Act 5, Scene 1, Lines 296 through 297. He now knows what Alonso knows. Stefano is no god, but only a, quote unquote, "drunken butler." Act 5, Scene 1, Line 280. Order at last fully restored, Prospero promises to tell his life's story to King Alonso and his entourage on the eve of departure from the island. The company will travel first to Naples, where Prospero will witness the marriage of Miranda and Ferdinand. After that, Prospero will go home to Milan, where he tells all assembled, quote unquote, "Every third thought shall be my grave." Act 5, Scene 1, Line 313. Given the mostly kind temporality and fortune of the romance universe, the magician ruler Prospero has been able to cast away his wondrous book and bury his miracle-making staff, respectively, assuming that he has by now done those things as promised, without losing his chance to recover the dukedom he lost. He has learned a costly, lengthy lesson about keeping an intensely private desire for knowledge in its place, and showing due regard for maintaining the symbolic and material authority that underwrite civic order. In truth, we can't know what kind of ruler the restored Duke of Milan will be, and neither do we know if he truly believes the magic he has given up is worth sacrificing to regain a dukedom he didn't enjoy governing to begin with. But perhaps that is to be too pessimistic about the play's conclusion. Prospero's final wishes are of interest in that aside from his last island-based act of freeing Ariel to the elements, as promised, what the aged man really desires is not so much to exercise great power again, but instead to practice the art of dying well, or ars moriendi, as it's called in Latin. Ariel's final burden is to provide, quote-unquote, "calm seas, auspicious gales," for the return voyage, and his master's last command to him is liberation itself. Quote-unquote, "Then to the elements be free, and fare thou well." Act 5, Scene 1, Line 316, and Lines 319 through 320. The impending marriage between Ferdinand and Miranda is full of hope for good things to come. They will, we may presume, carry on in a regenerated social and political environment, as comedy prescribes. These youngsters' projected future is important, but the play's emphasis, most viewers will probably agree, is more firmly on the elder statesman Prospero's partial recovery of his former glory. This glory is now supplemented by a more mature kind of knowledge, one that honors wisdom rather than mere erudition. Prospero, now a frailer but wiser man than he was when Antonio hustled him out of his dukedom, will decorously divide his time between governing Milan and preparing for his own, quote-unquote, rounding off with a sleep. All in all, The Tempest is a perfect romance play, replete with a bittersweet but magnificent ending. A serious potential for tyranny and harsh judgment has given way to seasoned justice, political order, and the greatest measure of personal satisfaction that old age can afford, watching one's children thrive. In the epilogue, Prospero, leaving his magic behind with the island, dutifully consigns his hopes of reaching Naples and Milan to the justice and imagination of the audience. Perhaps this makes Prospero seem like a diminished man, this one-time magus who has, quote-unquote, bedimmed the noontide sun, and even, so he says in echoing a passage from Book 7 of Ovid's Metamorphoses, raised the dead. Act 5, Scene 1, lines 441 through 442. But that is a matter of interpretation. To leave us with the impression of Prospero as the same powerful wizard he was at the play's beginning, we might suggest, would be to deny the ultimately humanizing touch of one of Shakespeare's finest and most mature plays. It may be asking too much of this moody, brilliant play to expect that Prospero will emerge from it sublimely happy. His epilogue ends on a penitent, yet hopeful note. Any happy ending will depend on the goodwill of Shakespeare's audience. This is to end where we began, with a simple expression of trust in the late-invented romance genre's ability to capture what's real, what matters most in life. Thanks for listening. The date of this audio recording is Friday, June 6th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition, 4-volume, genre-based format.